Brooklench released the funds to pay for, but that didn't serve animal products, wasn't owned by the client, and wouldn't look like a pointed attempt to support their competition. I heaved a despairing sigh. Well, fuck me sideways with a baked aubergine.
Something I can help you with, Luke?
Rhys Jones-Bowen, who had been passing on the way to either the coffee machine or the Burns unit, stuck his head round the door.
I mean, not with that. Not that I'm judging.
It was a rhetorical aubergine, Rhys.
I'm not sure that makes it any better. Now, what's the issue?
Just... I waved a dismissive hand. Donor stuff. He came in uninvited and plonked himself in the spare chair.
Well, let me hear it. A problem shared is a problem two people have.
I'm afraid you're not going to be able to do much good here. Not unless you happen to know a cheap, but not insultingly cheap, ideally slightly trendy and indie, but not threateningly trendy and indie, specifically vegan cafe/restaurant that I can take Adam and Tamara Clark to.
Oh, that's easy. Just take them to Bronwyn's.
My mouth sagged for a moment. Who's Bronwyn?
Friend of mine from way back. She's a vegan and she's doing a pop-up.
Okay, I said, hesitantly. That sounds promising. Just to check, is this pop-up happening in Aberystwyth?
Luke, I find it offensive the way you assume I only know about things in Wales. It's happening in Islington. Although she is from Aberystwyth.
And she's definitely vegan. Not like a volcanologist or a veterinarian.
I'm finding your lack of confidence a little bit hurtful, Luke.
He did in fact look fairly hurt.
We do have vegans in Wales, and I don't just mean the sheep.
Sorry.
That last bit was a joke. I'm allowed to make it because I'm from Wales. And so you can laugh.
The moment, such as it had ever been, had very much passed. But he was doing me a favour, maybe, so I forced out a wheezing noise I hoped sounded moderately amused.
But no, Rhys went on defensively, she's definitely vegan. I remember because she used to be vegetarian, but then she explained that she felt that it wasn't ethically defensible to be vegetarian but not vegan, owing to the complex interdependence of animal exploitation in industrialised farming. For example, Luke, did you know that there are two types of chickens? One for laying eggs, and one for eating. And because we only need the girl chickens for the eggs, the boy egg chickens just get thrown in a big blender and used for cat food.
I didn't know that. Thank you for ruining eggs for me.
Yeah, but they're brilliant with soldiers though, aren't they?
As in most conversations with Rhys Jones-Bowen, I really wasn't sure how we'd got here. Anyway, back to you saving my vegan bacon substitute. This Bronwyn, who used to be a vegetarian from Aberystwyth and is now a vegan in Islington, is she, how do I put this, actually any good? He scratched absently at his beard.
She won the South Wales Eco Food and Drink Award a couple of years back, though she did marry an Englishwoman, so her taste is questionable.
Wait, Bronwyn's a lesbian?
It'd be a bit strange of her to marry a woman if she wasn't.
No, I just kind of assumed all your friends would be more...
That's quite homophobic of you, Luke, if you don't mind my saying.
He climbed to his feet and ambled back into the corridor, pausing on the threshold to give me a stern look.
You're not the only gay in the village, you know.
Well, that was me told. That evening, as I was pushing the mess around my flat like a half-assed Sisyphus, I got a text and an attachment from Oliver. And was briefly really excited, until I found myself staring into the kindly, twinkly eyes of the late Sir Richard Attenborough. WTF is this? I sent back.
A dick pic?
You are not funny, I told him, laughing. And I definitely don't miss you now. A few minutes later.
I'm glad you chose to reach out to your father.
I'm not.
I can see you're handling this well.
I'm insecure. Tell me how mature I'm being.
I think...
And somehow I could hear him like a voiceover.
genuinely mature people don't demand praise for being mature.
Baby steps, I typed. Praise me anyway.
You're being very mature, and I'm very impressed.
Was that your sarcastic voice? I read that in your sarcastic voice.
I am actually proud of you. I just thought it would sound patronizing to say it.
You must have noticed I have zero self-respect. A pause.
I don't think that's true. I think you've just forgotten where you put it.
Well, you see my flat. Normally we'd wrap up here with him saying something semi-nice to me and me not knowing how to cope with it. But tonight, for some reason, I wasn't quite ready to let go. I know you can't talk about it, blah blah blah, but you okay? Work okay? Everything okay? Wow, look at me playing it cool, like a fucking cucumber. There was a longer than average Oliver pause. Oh fuck, I'd pushed it too far. Or he'd fallen asleep.
Yes, he said finally. I'm just not used to...
He left that half-sentence hanging for a really long time. Then...
Sorry, I pressed send too early.
Okay, he was not getting away with that. I'd like the second half, please.
I didn't mean to send the first half.
Well, you have. And as five-word phrases go, I'm just not used to is nearly as bad as we need to talk about.
Sorry, sorry.
Oliver!
I'm just not used to having something in my life that's as important to me as my job.
I typed out, you're really taking this fake boyfriend business seriously, aren't you? But didn't have the heart to send it. Instead, I tried, what about your gazillion other relationships?
They were different.
And while my thumb was mid-swipe,
by the way, I think we should have lunch tomorrow.
And again, before I could answer,
I mean, if it's agreeable. I'm just very aware the aim of this exercise was to generate positive publicity for you, which we can't if we aren't seen in public. So we have lunch, as I suggested, in my other text.
So he'd panicked then. As a world-class panicker, I was well placed to read the signs. There were a bunch of things I could have done. I could have teased him, or pressed him, or fucked with him. But none of them seemed right just then. So I let it go. That sounds great, I sent. But what about your case?
If you'd be so good as to bring me something, a wrap or something, I thought we could eat it on a bench.
Play your cards right, I'll get you a packet of crisps to go with it.
That won't be necessary, thank you.
A pause.
You're teasing me, aren't you?
I guess you'll find out tomorrow.
Meet me by the Gladstone statue at 1. We'll go somewhere nice and photographable.
God, he was... thoughtful. And in whatever the texting equivalent to silence was that followed his last message, I sat on my sofa with my knees tucked under my chin, my brain churning restlessly. It was that weird space where I didn't actually know what I was thinking, only that thinking was kind of happening. But afterwards there came this calm, like fine rain on a too hot day. Hell, I had a lunch date. With a barrister. A fake lunch date, admittedly, but a real barrister. And suddenly my job didn't look quite as crap, and my flat didn't look quite as impossible, and I didn't feel quite as hollow. Grabbing my phone again, I jumped into the WhatsApp group, which was currently called All About That Ace, and sent out a quick cry for help. I've been too bad at adulting for too long. Flat is unlivable in. Fake boyfriend horrified. Help! Priya was the first to respond with,
Luke, do you only ever message us when you want something?
Followed by Bridget.
I'll come help you. Just say when, where. How is fake boyfriend?
Oh dear. So much for not telling all my friends. Maybe I could ask them to keep extra special double quiet about it. What was that saying? Three can keep a secret if two of them try really, really hard. My flat, I typed. This weekend. I'll pay you in pizza. Though, frankly, that might make things worse. Do not order pizza. Somehow James Rolls-Royce sounded camp even in text.
The big chains are all run by Nazis. And also, the pizza's terrible. I will make a picnic and bring it with me.
Tidy party!
Bridge, of course. I think she'd had her caps lock stuck on since 2002.
I'm so excited. How is fake boyfriend?
Then Priya.
You just want me for my truck, don't you?
I bet. I couldn't help myself. You say that to all the girls.
How is fake boyfriend?
What I say to all the girls is that's my sculpture. Wanna fuck?
Luke, I'm going to keep asking you how things are with Oliver until you answer or my thumbs fall off.
I took pity on her. Or maybe on everyone else. It's wonderful. We're getting married. Why do you think I need to clean my flat?
You're being sarcastic. That means you secretly like him. See you on Sat. Can't wait.
From there, the conversation moved on to other things. And I stuck it out for long enough to prove that, whatever Priya said, I didn't only talk to my friends when I needed something from them. Then a bit longer to prove that I wasn't just sticking around to prove I didn't only talk to my friends when I needed something from them. Then a little bit longer than that, because I realised Priya had been right all along, and I was a bad person. And besides, it was nice. I hadn't realised how far I'd drifted from them, because they'd kept sculling towards me anyway. But I had. And I shouldn't have. Chapter 22. Pictures of me and Oliver having lunch on a bench near a statue of Gladstone didn't exactly make headlines. Two men eat sandwiches was never going to get the traction of minor celebrity vomits on other minor celebrity. But they were out there, showing me off in all my nice boyfriend-having, non-threatening glory. We did lunch again on Friday, without much expectation of anyone caring, but we felt we should keep up appearances anyway. And also, I, you know, liked, you know, seeing, you know, him, and stuff. True, it wasn't going to last, because come a discreet time after his parents' anniversary, we'd be going our separate ways, with no need to ever speak to each other ever again. But maybe that was a good thing. It turned out that there was way less pressure when it was all just pretending, and for now I didn't have to think too hard about what I'd do when the pretending stopped. Saturday rolled around, and despite Bridges' all-caps assurance that she couldn't wait to come and tidy my flat, I wasn't entirely surprised to get a call from her at 9 in the morning.
Luke,
she wailed.
I'm so sorry. I super wanted to come round for the tidy party, but you will not believe what's happened.
Tell me what's happened.
I can't really talk about it, but you know the Elf Swords of Luminera, Robert Kennington, series of 20-something fantasy novels that have been going since the late 70s?
Didn't he die?
Yes, back in 2009, but he gave his notes to Richard Cavanagh, and he was going to write the last three books in the series. But then the first one had to be split into three other books for publication, and the other two have been broken into a quadrilogy and tetralogy.
Aren't those both sets of four?
There's a technical difference, but I don't have time to go into it right now. Anyway, the point is, it was all going really well, and Netflix was interested in optioning books 3, 7, and 9, and we were trying to get them to look at 1, 2, and 6, and I think they were about to pick them up. But now Kavanagh has also died, and Raymond Carlyle and Roger Claiborne are both saying that he wanted them to take over, and they're refusing to collaborate with each other.
Yeah, I said. That sounds complicated.
I know, and I'm probably going to be on a conference call all day. If I can't get them to work it out, I'm definitely going to get fired.
I rolled my eyes, only because she couldn't see me. You're not going to get fired, Bridge. You never get fired. They keep getting you to deal with this sort of nonsense because you're actually fantastic at your job. There was a long silence.
Are you feeling okay?
Fine. Why?
I can't remember the last time you said something nice about... well, anything.
I thought about this for slightly longer than I was comfortable having to think about it.
When you got that new haircut, the one with the cute fringe, I told you it looked really good on you.
That was 3 years ago.
I gasped.
It was not.
Luke, I can remember when fringes were in.
Jesus. I sank down onto the arm of my sofa. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I'm saving these stories for when I'm best man at your wedding.
You might be saving them for a long time.
Then it's going to be a very long speech. And I have to go, but please tell me how much you like Oliver first.
Nothing, I insisted, is happening with Oliver. She squeaked happily.
Ah, but you're not complaining about how pompous and boring he is. That means it's going exactly according to plan. Mustache, ciao, darling.
She was gone before I could chow back. 20 minutes later, the James Royce Royces appeared. James Royce Royce with an actual picnic basket. Oh, Luke. He gazed around in dismay.
I hadn't realised it had got this bad. I'm not sure I'll feel safe eating in here.
People eat in fields, I pointed out, like places where cows shit. No cows have shit in my flat.
Are you familiar, Sweet Pea, with the term damning with faint praise?
Did you come here to help or take the piss? He shrugged.
I thought I'd try a bit of both.
A rumble outside heralded the arrival of Priya, her girlfriend, and her pickup truck. I mean, the rumbling was the truck. Her girlfriend was scary in other ways, what with being a legit grown-up and everything. By the time all five of us were crammed into my front room, surrounded by the detritus of the last 5 years, I was feeling pretty epically low. Welp, I made a helpless gesture. This is my life, and I wish I hadn't invited you to come and look at it.
You know, said Priya, I'd normally say something mean, but you're so pathetic right now it wouldn't be satisfying.
Her girlfriend, whose name was Teresa, but who I had a hard time thinking of as anything but Professor Lang, elbowed her in the ribs.
That's still mean, dear.
You like me when I'm mean.
James Royce Royce shooed at them gently.
I'd tell you to get a room, but as we can see, there isn't one.
It's not that bad. Professor Lang picked up a sofa cushion, and then put it down again very quickly.
I lived in worse in my student days.
Luke's 28.
Ah, I could always count on Priya to boost me up when I was down.
Well, to my surprise, Professor Lang shot me a mischievous smile. Considering that when I was 28 I was lying to my husband, denying my sexuality and pretending work would solve all my problems, I don't feel in any position to judge.
I stared at them both. I have no idea how Priya wound up with someone so much less of an arsehole than her.
I'm a tortured artist, Priya shot back, and I'm fucking incredible in bed. Now, how do we tackle the pile of unadulterated skank you call your home?
There was a humiliatingly long silence. Then James Royce Royce spoke up, unexpectedly. We prioritise things that need to be thrown away. Recycling over there. He pointed to a moderately empty corner. Refuse over there. Another point, another corner. Waste, electronic and electrical on that table. Then Priya, Luke and Teresa will go to the dump, while James and I start on the dishes. By the time you get back, there'll be enough space to be going through the laundry. Clean. It was pointing time again. Dirty whites, dirty colours. From there we'll regroup and start on the surfaces. We all took a moment to remind ourselves that there were some jobs James Royce Royce was scarily good at.
You see, said James Royce Royce, kissing his husband's cheek extravagantly. Isn't he fabulous?
We got to work, and holy shit was it work. Having a system helped a lot, but it turned out I'd dropped a lot of things over the years, metaphorically and literally, and picking them all up and figuring out how best to dispose of them was surprisingly draining. It didn't help that Priya kept sarcastically double-checking whether I was sure I wanted to get rid of something with such obvious sentimental value as the empty Twiglets tube from last Christmas, or a lone Mr. Grumpy sock with a hole in the toe. Then we piled the pickup shamefully full of crap and drove it down to the tip. I nearly sent Oliver a picture of our neatly sorted recycling piles, so I could show off how sensible and mature I was being. But then I realised how much I wanted to surprise him with how sensible and mature I was being. He'd made it painfully clear sex was very much off the table, but maybe if I managed to get at least some of my shit together, he might like me enough to kiss me? Not that I really had any right to expect that, or ask for that, or imagine how it might feel. Except, now I'd had the thought, I didn't entirely want to let it go. Which was an epic red flag. I'd built my whole life around not wanting things I couldn't have, and yes, that had left me alone and bitter in a messy flat, but I was still worried the alternative was worse. By the time we'd got back from the dump, the washing machine was thrashing through the first of what would likely be approximately 27,000 loads, and James Rolls-Royce had spread a red and white checked picnic blanket across my newly visible living room floor. It was laden with goodies, and there were even clean plates to eat them off. Been a while since I'd seen those. We all flopped down and waited semi-patiently for James Rolls-Royce to introduce the food. I'd never quite figured out if it was a chef thing or a him thing, but he got borderline huffy if you tried to eat something he'd made for you before he'd told you all about it.
"So," he announced, "this is a traditional pork pie with hot water crust pastry. Sorry, not suitable for Priya, but it's a picnic. You can't have a picnic without a pork pie."
Priya gave him a look.
"Yes, that is absolutely true. I have all these magical childhood memories of how every summer I'd go out into the park with my family and my mum would make roti and samosas and a raita and a pie none of us could eat. Then when we got home, we'd lend it to the Jewish family next door so they could take it out on their next picnic."
"I'm sorry, darling. That was culturally insensitive of me. But I did make you a lovely quiche."
"Oh," she perked up. "Is it the broccoli and goat cheese one?
Caramelised red onion, cream and Stilton.
Okay, I'm sold. You can keep your pie, infidels."
"There's also,"
went on James Rolls-Royce with typical ceremony,
"a kale Waldorf salad with buttermilk dressing, a selection of handmade dips, including the hummus you were so fond of last time, Teresa, some of my homemade bread, naturally, and a range of local cheeses. Then to finish, we have individual raspberry fools in mason jars. And don't worry, Luke, I brought my own spoons."
Priya dragged a cooler out from behind my sofa.
"Well, I brought beer."
She struck a Rolls-Roycean pose.
"It's a sumptuous hops-based beverage served in a bottle."
"I'm seeing what you're doing there, Priya."
Hemok glowered at her over the top of his black-rimmed hipster frames.
"And since I've already blotted my cultural copybook, I've always wondered why you're okay with alcohol but not with pigs."
"You want the long answer or the short answer?"
"What's the short answer?"
"Fuck you, James."
She grinned.
"And,"
he asked warily,
"the long answer?"
"Because in case you haven't noticed, I'm not a very good Muslim. I fuck women, I drink alcohol, and I don't believe in God. But I grew up not eating pork, and so it still feels weird to eat an animal that rolls around in its own shit all day."
"Actually, pigs are very clean animals."
"Yeah," she shrugged. "Still not going to eat them."
There was a brief period of calm while we all attempted to put a dent in James Rolls-Royce's characteristically excessive picnic. Eventually, Teresa, who clearly had better manners than the rest of us, said,
"Priya tells me you have a new boyfriend, Luke. Will he be joining us?"
"He's got a work thing." I waved a hunk of James Rolls-Royce's delicious homemade bread, slightly sheepishly. "He's a barrister."
"Oh, what speciality?"
Help. I hadn't prepared for the quiz.
Criminal stuff? He defends them and stuff."
"That's very admirable. I had a friend from university who went into criminal law, but he recently moved into consultancy. I understand it can be very draining and not particularly lucrative."
"Well, Oliver's got a lot of passion for it. I can't imagine him wanting to do anything else, really."
She looked thoughtful for a moment.
Then he's lucky, although in my experience there's no one thing you need to make you happy.
Is this, said Priya, your way of telling me you want a threesome?
Teresa gave her a wry smile.
Absolutely, in front of your friends at a picnic, in a flat that still looks a little bit like the siege of Constantinople, is exactly how I choose to have that conversation.
That sounds like it's probably bad. I went for another piece of infidel pie. But I don't actually know what the siege of Constantinople looked like. Teresa looked thoughtful again. I guess thoughtful was kind of the default in academia.
To be fair, it depends which siege you're talking about, but I was thinking of the one in 1204.
Oh, good, because if it had been any of the other ones, I'd have been deeply offended.
From which point the conversation degenerated into a mixture of quite a sophisticated description of the sack of Constantinople during the Fourth Crusade, from Teresa, and some rather juvenile speculation about the presence, or otherwise, of my stripy underpants at the event, from everybody else. I would have tried to steer us onto practically any other topic, except, knowing my friends, any other topic would have been just as bad. So, while they were trying to work out which bits of my laundry would be most useful against a crusading army, I found myself surreptitiously checking my phone. Turned out, while I'd been dragging bags of rubbish between flat and truck and dump, I'd missed a text from Oliver. He'd sent me a picture of Richard Chamberlain.
Nice dick, I sent back.
Oh my God, Luke! Cried James Royce-Royce. What's happened to your mouth?
I glanced up, startled. If there's hummus on my face, just tell me.
It's far worse than that. You were smiling.
Was I?
At your phone.
From the uncomfortable hot feeling and the way everyone was looking at me, I was pretty sure I was blushing.
I saw something funny on the internet.
Wow.
Priya put on her extra specially sardonic face she only used when I was being a total numpty.
A+ lying. Really good detail, really sells it.
It was a cat. Being scared of... something.
It's cucumbers. It's always cumbers. And that was not a cat meme smile. That was an I've got a sweet message from someone I like smile.
I threw my hands up. Fine, Oliver sent me a dick pic, okay?
There was a long silence.
Well?
James Royce-Royce drew in a long breath.
I enjoy a good penis as much as the next man, but I don't normally go misty-eyed over them.
Somewhat shamefacedly, I turned my phone around and showed them the young Richard Chamberlain in a brown velvet coat, holding a glass slipper.
It's sort of a joke we have.
Suddenly, with the exception of Teresa, who was looking very slightly confused, everyone had their phones out, and my own lit up with notifications from the WhatsApp group, which had just been renamed Don't Luke Back in Anger.
Bridget, we have something very important to tell you.
Luke and Oliver are totally in love.
We are not.
He sent him a dick pic, and he got all smiley over it.
What? That makes no sense. Oliver would never do that.
It was a picture of Richard Chamberlain.
Which means they have private jokes. They're getting married in August.
Yay!
Nobody is marrying anybody. It's just a bit of friendly banter about men called Richard. It doesn't mean anything.
I'm really confused by the men called Richard thing.
I think it's a pun on dick pic. It's about Luke's level.
OMG, that is so sweet. Luke, send him a dick pic back right now.
I'm not sending my boyfriend either a picture of my penis or a picture of a famous guy called Richard just because my friends told me to.
Oh my God, you call him your boyfriend. Also, G2G, one of my authors is being sued by the state of Wyoming.
Also, my girlfriend is in the room and we're ignoring her and she's too fucking polite to mention it.
I was used to my friends teasing me about basically everything. It was how we related to each other. But that afternoon, they'd hit a survivalist's bunker's worth of ammunition.
Apparently, the idea of me actually giving a shit about someone was such a novelty that it supported an endless stream of jokes, jibes, and ribbings. And for some reason, I was totally defenseless, reduced to stuttering and blushing, when I was sure once upon a time it would all have just bounced straight off my armour of apathy. It took a bit of getting used to, because I'd spent a long time pretending I was invulnerable. But they were so obviously happy for me, and their goal was so obviously to get me to admit that I was happy for myself, that even I couldn't quite justify being a prick to them about it. Which meant they got to laugh at me, and I got to take it. And it didn't entirely suck. Chapter 23. I woke up the next day in a clean flat, which was fucking weird. It was almost like I'd moved house. I didn't recognise anything, or know where anything was, and there was this sense of emptiness I hadn't been conscious of since Miles moved out. Although there was also a sense of possibility that was completely new. It was so fresh and exciting that I got out of bed without my customary 5 more minutes, whoops, it's noon. I even considered putting actual clothes on, but I didn't want to overwhelm myself with too much maturity all at once, and shrugged into my dressing gown instead. What I did do, though, was make the bed. Not as well as Oliver would have, but well enough that he wouldn't rub his temples in dismay at the sight of it. I was in the kitchen, making coffee, very, very carefully, so as not to get grounds all over the now shiny countertops, when my phone rang.
"Allô, Luc, mon canton," said Mum.
"Hi, Mum, what's up?"
"I just wanted to say how proud I am that you made the effort with your father."
I sighed. "I guess it was the right thing to do."
"No, of course it was the right thing to do. He has the cancer. But I would have supported you if you wanted to do the wrong thing as well."
"Supported me, but not been proud of me."
"Oh no, I would still have been proud. I admit that a tiny part of me wishes I had the courage to tell him to go fuck himself."
"You wrote an entire album telling him to go fuck himself."
"Yes, but he did not have the cancer then."
"Well?" Sandwiching my phone between my ear and shoulder, I tried to hold the cafetiere steady while I pressed the plunger. But I must have overfilled it, because it still geezered out the top. "We don't know how it's going to go. I may still tell him to go fuck himself."
"That's fair. But I do also have a bone to pick with you, mon cher."
I dabbed desperately at the countertops with what was left of the kitchen roll James Royce Royce had brought with him. "Why? What have I done?"
"What you have done is not tell me that you have a boyfriend. And worse, you have told your father. And we both know your father is objectively a complete oyster dick."
"A complete what?"
"It loses something in translation. And that is not the point. The point is I am very upset that you have been keeping secrets from me."
"I'm not..." In my eagerness to mop up my minor coffee spillage, I knocked over the rest of the cafetiere. Fuck.
"You had an important piece of information to tell me about having a boyfriend, and you did not tell me about having a boyfriend. How is this not a secret?"
"I told you I had a date."
"Luke, that is chopping up hairs."
Okay, there were two crises. Mum thought I was lying to her, and I'd already trashed my kitchen. I abandoned the coffee for now and headed back to the living room, where I lay down on the sofa so I couldn't damage anything else. "Look, I'm sorry I didn't tell you. It's actually a bit more complicated than that."
"Mon Dieu, he's married, he's in the wardrobe, you're secretly straight and seeing a woman. You know I would love you anyway, even if you were a straight."
No, it's none of those things."
"Wait, I have it. You're not really dating anybody. You've just persuaded some poor man to pretend to be your boyfriend because you are tired of everyone thinking you are lonely and pathetic."
The problem with Mum was that she knew me far too well. Actually, yeah, that one. Only nobody thinks I'm lonely and pathetic. As it happens, I have a very important work function that I need to take someone to. A sigh gusted over the line.
"What are you doing, mon canton? This is not normal behavior, even when your parents are estranged rock stars from the 80s.
I know, but somehow it's wound up being the most functional relationship I think I've ever had. Please don't jinx it for me.
Oh, no. This is all my fault. I did not model positive romantic choices for you when you were growing up, and now you are dating a fake man.
He's not a fake man.
I sat upright so abruptly I twisted the cushion half off the sofa.
He's a real man.
Is he even really a gay? Probably you are going to fall for him, and then it is going to turn out he is engaged to this Duke, and you are going to try and steal him away from the Duke, and the Duke will try to have you killed, and he will have consumption and try to make you think he doesn't love you when really he does, and...
Mom, is that Moulin Rouge?
It could happen. I'm not saying there will be singing, but I'm worried this fake guy will break your heart.
I put my head in my hands. Can you please stop using gay as a noun?
First, I'm not meant to use it as a pejorative. Now I'm not meant to use it as a noun. This is very hard for me.
Look, Mum. Time for my best calm and rational voice. I'm so sorry I didn't explain this to you earlier. Oliver's a real person, and he's not Nicole Kidman. And we've got an arrangement where we're going to pretend to be dating for a couple of months just to make both our lives easier. There was a long silence.
I'm just worried that someone will hurt you again.
Yeah, well, so was I for a long time, and I think that was hurting me more.
There was another long silence, followed by...
Then I want to meet him.
What part, I asked, of fake boyfriend did you miss?
I didn't miss anything. I especially did not miss the part when you said this was the most functional relationship you had ever had.
Look at me being hoist by my own petard. It's still not real.
I pay my bills with songs written by a girl I can barely remember being. Real is not something that interests me very much.
After 28 years, I'd reached the point that I only ever argued with Mum to see how I'd lose.
Fine, I'll ask him. He's working right now.
Does he live in Canada?
No, he lives in Clerkenwell.
She made a Gaelic noise.
You should come see me anyway. Judy and I are about to start a new season of The Drag Race, and we would like you to spill the hot tea on the queens for us.
I glanced around my slowly de-pristining flat. If I carried on at this rate, by the time Oliver saw it, the place would be a tip again. I'll come over tonight.
Yippee!
Mum, nobody says yippee.
Are you sure? I read it in a phrase book in 1974. Anyway, Judy and I will see you this evening. I will make my special curry.
Do not make your special curry.
Too late. She'd gone. I spent the rest of the day taking twice as long to do everything, since now doing anything in my flat required me to tidy up afterwards, or else undo all my friend's hard work, and before I'd even had the chance to milk it for Oliver points. I was just getting ready to hoi for Epsom, when my phone rang again.
Sorry to call unexpectedly, said Oliver.
I was glad I was alone, so I could grin like an idiot, without a running commentary.
Why, do you normally book your calls in advance? Do you call ahead? Are you like, hi, this is Oliver, I'm just ringing you up to say I'm going to be ringing you up?
There was a tiny pause.
I did not think through how silly that was going to sound. I'm just aware that I told you I was going to be working this weekend, so you might be busy, and I wanted to be respectful of that.
I wanted to be respectful of that is totally the title of your sex tape.
Well, he murmured, I can imagine worse titles.
Can you? Can you really? Because I very much cannot.
St. Winifred's School Choir presents There's No One Quite Like Grandma?
My mouth dropped open.
You are a sick man.
My apologies. I was just trying to prove a point.
I'd say you'd ruined that song for me, but it was kind of pre-ruined by its own existence.
Lucien.
He suddenly sounded deadly serious, and despite the lesson I should have learned from the bad news text, I still felt faintly nauseous.
I called because I've done all the work I can on my case, and I'd like to see you this evening. If that's agreeable.
My heart stopped trying to choke itself to death. Jesus, Oliver, don't use that voice unless you're dumping someone or telling them their cat died. Also, did you just say, if that's agreeable?
I panicked.
Also, title of your next sex tape.
If that's agreeable, or I panicked?
Both.
I take it you're too busy, and I know we saw each other on Friday, and the papers are likely to be sick of you for at least another week. I'm sorry, I should have planned this better, and please don't say that's the title of my third sex tape.
I could have teased him about his imaginary sex tapes literally forever, but there was the whole wanting to see me thing, which was perfect. It's not that I don't... Shit. I was coming perilously close to telling Oliver that I'd rather see him than watch old episodes of Drag Race with my mother, her best friend, and her best friend's spaniels. Which, now I thought about, wasn't the tremendous compliment I'd built it up to be in my head. Still couldn't say it, though. I've kind of accidentally told my mum I'll go see her tonight.
I would like you to formally acknowledge that I have taken the moral high road, and shall not suggest that accidentally told my mum I'll go see her tonight is the title of your sex tape.
Oh, hell no, I protested. You don't get credit for pretending you're not making the joke you're clearly making.
Plausible deniability, Lucien. Plausible deniability.
How could I hear him smiling?
But you should visit your mother. I know how much she means to you.
I mean, you could... help. Words were happening, and I couldn't seem to stop them. Come, if you wanted to. It'll be awful, because Mum already thinks you're Nicole Kidman, don't ask, and she's making a curry which she does not know how to do, but won't admit she doesn't know how to do, and her best friend is... this... Actually, I don't even know how to describe her, but she once told me she'd shot an elephant in her nightdress, and when I said, what was an elephant doing wearing your nightdress, she said, it broke into my tent and I think it got draped over its trunk.
I recommend you breathe at some point in the very near future.
He had a point. I breathed. Anyway, you really can sit this one out. I'm pretty sure it's too early in our fake relationship for you to be meeting my mother.
Well, aren't I going to be meeting your father next week?
Well, that's different. I care about my mum.
I'd like to meet her, if it wouldn't make you uncomfortable.
I opened my mouth, realized I had no idea what I was going to say, and finally settled on... Okay, then. Given I was already late, Oliver suggested we rendezvous at Waterloo, which I suggested sounded like a terrible love song from the 40s. Then I texted Mum to let her know I'd be bringing my fake boyfriend, threw on my coat, dashed out the door, and tried not to think too hard about what it meant that I wanted Oliver to meet my mother. Chapter 24. Half an hour later, I was sitting on a train with Oliver, and it was weird. The problem was that being on public transport with someone for more than a couple of stops on the tube fell down the uncanny butt crack between necessity and social occasion. I mean, it was basically just the two of you, sitting down facing each other for about as long as you would if you were in a restaurant, only with much worse surroundings and without food to give the whole thing focus. Worse, I was worried I was going to blurt out something awful like, I missed you, or... I tidied my flat for you. So, I said, how's the case?
I'm afraid I can't...
Talk about it?
Precisely.
A pause, both of us looking anywhere except at each other.
And...
He crossed one leg over the other, and then uncrossed it when he kicked me in the knee.
Your work? It's going well, I take it?
Actually, yes. By the low bar it sets for itself. The Beetle Drive hasn't accidentally been relocated to a warehouse in Tooting Beck. Nothing's caught fire in at least a couple of weeks, and some of the donors I scared off by doing the bad gay might deign to come back to us.
I'm glad the plan seems to be working, but I confess I'm increasingly uncomfortable with the assumptions that seem to underlie it.
You'd better not be getting cold feet on a train halfway to my mum's.
I'm not. I just don't think you should have to be dating someone like me for it to be acceptable to be someone like you.
I finally met his eyes again. How had I ever found them cold?
I know, right? And what especially grinds my gonads is that it's not even my, I will admit, real and extensive personality flaws they object to. It's that they think I might have casual sex sometimes, which, ironically, I'd be doing more of if I was in a healthier place emotionally.
I hope you wouldn't.
He blinked several times. That is, not in a sex-negative way, just that, as far as I know, we never agreed this was going to be an open fake relationship.
What would that even be? Are you telling me that you don't want me to have fake sex with other people when I'm fake dating you?
Well, I hadn't given it much thought. But if we were really dating, I'd want to be monogamous, because that's just, well, my preference. And so if you're going to pretend to date me, I'm afraid you'll have to pretend to be monogamous. Which I suppose, when the press are following you, is going to be an awful lot like being genuinely monogamous. Is that...
He seemed to be trying to sink through the seat.
Going to be a problem?
I wish I could say yes, because I'm beating them off with a stick. But in practice, it just slightly changes the reason I'm not getting laid.
I thought when you said you hadn't been in a relationship, you meant, you hadn't been in a relationship, rather than you weren't.
I stared at him, daring him to finish that sentence.
Getting any, as it were.
I had to laugh. As it were, indeed. And I bet you couldn't imagine me being any more of a loser.
You know I don't think you're a loser. But I don't understand why you'd have difficulty...
He seemed to be flailing again. As it were?
In this area.
This would have been a brilliant opportunity to build a deeper and more lasting relationship, based on trust, honesty, and mutual understanding. I could have told him about Miles, about partying like there was no tomorrow, and then waking up one day and finding out there definitely was. Oliver would have understood. It was kind of his whole jam.
It's complicated, I said instead.
And he didn't push it, because of course he wouldn't push it, and I almost wanted him to, just so I could get it over with. But that was also the worst thing I could possibly imagine. So we went back to silence for the rest of the trip. Fun times. I'd never been so glad to see Epsom Station. Facilities lacking, according to Google. Hopefully the woeful inadequacy of the station at which you couldn't even use your fucking Oyster card would take my mind off my woefully inadequate attempts to emotionally connect with my fake boyfriend. We detrained ourselves and struck out across the fields towards Pucklethroop in the Wold. The sun was just setting, making everything soft and golden and shiny, like it was taunting me with romance. And Oliver was all casual again. Another crisp pair of jeans, into which his distractingly fabulous arse was wholesomely nestled, and a cream cable-knit jumper that made him look like he belonged on a Tumblr feed called Fuck Yeah Guys in Knitwear. He paused with one foot on an actual stile, the wind ruffling playfully through his hair, making me briefly resentful that the fucking atmosphere was getting more action with my fake boyfriend than I was.
"I've been thinking," he said. "We should probably refine our boyfriend act a little before the Beetle drive."
What? I was not staring at anything. Especially not anything crotch-related. But the stile. He had one leg on a stile. No jury in the land would convict me.
"I don't want to let you down, and...
Lucien,
my eyes are up here."
"Then stop being in my face with your jeans." He took his foot off the stile.
"We work well when it's just the two of us, but we should practice being together in company."
"Is this," I gave him a sly look, "your way of saying you want to spend more time with me?"
"No. My way of saying I want to spend more time with you was when I rang you up earlier today and asked if I could spend some time with you.
Oh, right. Yeah. Something struck me. Hang on, are you telling me you want to spend more time with me?
Would you still believe me if I claimed it was verisimilitude?
Maybe. I have very low self-esteem. Probably aware I was watching super intently, he climbed self-consciously over the stile and waited for me on the other side. I hopped over after, taking his hand without really thinking about it as I came down.
Of course I want to spend time with you, he said, still holding my hand. I'd like you to come as my date to Jennifer's 30th birthday in a couple of weeks.
We headed for Mum's. I didn't mention the hand thing in case it went away. Who's Jennifer?
An old friend from university. She and her husband are having a few of us round for dinner.
I gave him a suspicious look. Are these your straight friends?
I don't generally categorize my friends by sexuality.
Do you only have straight friends?
I know Tom. And you?
Tom doesn't count. I mean, not because he's bisexual. I mean, because he's dating Bridget. I mean, not that dating a woman makes him less bisexual. I'm just saying, he's not your friend. She's your friend. And I'm the rando you're pretending to date, so I'm pretty sure I don't count either.
He smoothed down his adorably wind-tousled hair.
My friends are just the people who happen to be my friends. There are a lot of straight people in the world. I like some of them.
Oh my God. I gazed at him in horror. You're like one of those documentaries about, I don't know, a pig that got lost on the edge of the village and wound up being raised by gorillas.
I think that might be insulting.
Pigs are cute.
It's more that you seem to object to my not choosing my friends based solely on who they do or don't want to sleep with.
But do they not just not get you?
Lucien, most of the time you don't get me.
His fingers twisted restlessly against mine.
I tried to do the community thing. But I went to one LGBTQ plus, well, LGB, as it was in those days, mixer at university, realized I had nothing in common with any of these people except my sexual orientation, and never went back.
I half laughed, not because I thought it was funny, but because it was so alien to my experience.
When I turned up at mine, I felt like I'd come home.
And I'm glad for you. But I made different choices, and I'd rather you didn't see them as mistakes.
Honestly, it didn't make sense to me. But I also didn't want to upset Oliver, and I was still slightly stinging from being told I didn't understand him. Well, I didn't. But I wanted to. I gave his hand a squeeze.
I'm sorry. I'd love to go to your straight people party with you.
Thank you.
His lips twitched.
Just a quick word of advice. If you're at a straight people party, you should try to avoid referring to it as a straight people party.
I tusked.
God, it's political correctness gone mad.
We tromped through the next couple of fields, which, with the one we'd just been through, made up the three fields that ran onto Three Fields Road.
Nearly there.
I pointed down the winding track. Main road's down that way, and Mum's just round the corner. Oliver made a noise that probably wasn't a hiccup, but did a good impression of one.
Are you okay?
I asked.
I'm a little nervous.
You should be. Mum's curries are... Oh, fuck! I didn't tell her you're vegetarian!
It's fine. I can make an exception.
Do not make an exception!
In fact, if you could, please pretend you don't want me eating meat either. You would be doing my lower intestines a massive favour.
I'm not sure coming across as the sort of man who polices her son's diet would endear me to your mother.
I thought about it for a moment.
I'm willing to take that risk.
I'm very much not.
Are you...
I peeked over at him. Actually worried about meeting my mum?
His hand was a little clammy.
What if she doesn't like me? She might not think I'm good enough for you.
Well, if you don't walk out, leaving me alone with a 3-year-old kid, you'll be doing way better by me than my dad did by her, so, you know,
Not a lot to lose here.
Lucien.
He gave another anxiety hiccup.
I'm serious.
So am I. I stopped and turned to face him. Look, I can't believe you're making me say this. But you're great. You're clever and thoughtful and hot. And you went to fucking Oxford and you're a fucking lawyer. You're not dying of consumption or promised to a duke. Don't ask. And you're nice to me. And that's really all that matters to her. He gazed at me for a long moment. I had no idea what he was thinking, but suddenly I was all to pieces. My mouth had gone dry, and my pulse had gone wild, and, in that moment, the only thing I wanted in the world was for him to...
Come on, he said. We'll be late.
Chapter 25. I was about to put my key in the lock when the front door flew open, almost as if my mum had been lurking behind it, watching the road through the stained glass inset, like a total creeper.
Luc, mon canton, she cried,
and then turned her attention, viper-like, to Oliver.
And you must be the fake boyfriend.
I sighed. This is Oliver, mum. Oliver, this is my mum.
I'm very pleased to meet you, Ms. O'Donnell.
From anyone else, that would have sounded stilted. With Oliver, it was just the way he talked.
Please call me Odile. You are most welcome.
Okay, this was going well.
But,
went on Mum,
you must clear something up for me.
Or maybe not.
Luc tells me that you are a fake boyfriend, but not a fake gay. If that is the case, why are you not going out with my son for real? What is wrong with him?
Mum, I flailed on the doorstep. What are you doing? You don't even know Oliver, and now you're trying to browbeat him into dating me.
He looks nice, clean, tall. He's wearing a good jumper.
I can't believe you're trying to pimp me out to a complete stranger because you like his jumper. He could be a serial killer.
I'm not, said Oliver quickly, just for the record.
She glared at me.
It is the principle. Even if he is a serial killer, he should still want to go out with you.
To reiterate, said Oliver, I'm not a serial killer.
That does not answer my question. I want to know what is wrong with my son that you are only willing to pretend to go out with him. I mean, look at him. He's lovely. A bit untidy, I suppose, and his nose is a little large, but you know what they say about men with big noses.
Oliver gave a little cough.
They make good sommeliers?
Exactement. Also, they have big penises.
Mum! I exploded. I'm 28! You've got to stop embarrassing me in front of boys!
I'm not being embarrassing. I'm saying nice things. I said you had a big penis. Everybody loves a big penis.
Stop saying penis.
It's just a word, Luc. Don't be so English. I raised you better than that.
She turned to Oliver.
Luke's father, you know, he had a huge penis.
To my horror, Oliver got the kind of thoughtful look you never want your boyfriend to get over your dad's dick.
Had? What's happened to it since?
I don't know, but I like to think either the drugs shriveled it up, or it got squeezed into nothing by a groupie's vagina.
Mum, I loud muttered, like she was hugging me in front of my school friends.
Oh, mon cher, I'm sorry I embarrassed you.
She patted my cheek, embarrassingly, and then turned to the boy she was embarrassing me in front of.
You'd better come in, Oliver.
I trailed after them into the hall, which was about the right size for Mum, slightly too small for Mum and me, and far too small for Mum, me, Oliver, and the four spaniels who bolted through from the front room and started nosing eagerly at him as the newest object in the building. He did that thing that people who are good with dogs do, where they crouch down and the dogs squirm all over them, tails wagging and ears flopping, and it's adorable and domestic and bleh. And Oliver was blatantly going to want a dog in the future, wasn't he? Probably from a shelter, and it'd have, like,
3 legs, but he'd train it to catch frisbees as well as a dog with 4 legs, and he'd be in the park with it throwing frisbees, and this really hot guy would come up to him and be like, "Hey, nice dog, wanna fuck?" And he'd be like, "Sure, because your mother's never said the word penis in front of me." And then they'd get a lovely semi-detached in Cheltenham, and Oliver would make French toast every morning, and they'd walk the dog together, hand in hand, and have meaningful conversations about ethics and...
"Come on!"
yelled Judy.
"Stop dawdling in the hallway. I want to meet Luke's new beau."
We bundled into the front room, Oliver doing a better job of navigating spaniels than I did, or indeed had ever done.
"You must be Baroness Chumley Faffle," he said, with his usual effortless courtesy. "I've heard so much about you."
"Pish posh, call me Judy. And I haven't heard a damn thing about you, because Luke doesn't think it's worth telling us things. Do you, Luke?"
I slumped onto the sofa, as I'd been doing my entire life.
"I'm sorry I didn't tell you about my fake boyfriend soon enough."
"It's your loss. I know all about having a fake boyfriend."
"Do you?" I asked warily. "Do you really?"
Mum, who had only interacted with about 3 people since the dawn of the millennium, seemed to have decided hospitality meant poking. She poked Oliver towards me.
"Sit down, Oliver, sit down. Make yourself at home." "Oh, yes," Judy went on. "Just after my coming out in 56, I spent 3 months pretending to be engaged to this lovely Russian fellow."
Oliver lowered himself gingerly down beside me, and all the spaniels tried to get into his lap simultaneously. Honestly, couldn't blame him.
"Charles, Camilla."
Judy snapped her fingers.
"Michael of Kent, down. Leave the poor fellow alone."
Charles, Camilla, and Michael of Kent slunk abashedly to the floor, leaving Oliver with a single more manageable spaniel. A spaniel that currently had its forepaws on his shoulders, and was licking his nose lovingly, while staring deeply into his eyes. If I'd tried to do that, he'd have told me he wanted it to mean something.
"He said..."
If Judy let rampaging dogs get in the way of an anecdote, she'd never have said anything.
"It was very important that people believed he had a legitimate reason for staying in England and interacting with the aristocracy. You can keep Eugenie, she's rather a love. Looking back on it, I think he might have been in the KGB.
"The spaniel?" asked Oliver.
"Vladislav. They pulled him out of the Thames in the end, with a small calibre bullet in his brain. Poor fellow. I say, you're not working for the... Well, I suppose it would be the FSB now, wouldn't it?"
"No, but that's what I'd say if I was in the FSB.
"He's not in the FSB," I interrupted, before Judy could get ideas in her head. "Or the KGB, or the NKVD, or Spectre, or Hydra. He's a barrister, and he's nice. Now leave him alone."
Mum, who had been flitting back and forth from the kitchen, stuck her head through the door.
"We are just interested..."
"In whether he's a spy?"
"In general. He's a guest. Besides, you haven't brought a boy home in a very long time."
"And," I grumbled, "I'm starting to remember why." Oliver made a placating gesture from behind Eugenie.
"Really, it's fine. Thank you for your hospitality."
"Oh, now, doesn't he have lovely manners?"
announced Judy, as if Oliver wasn't in the room.
"I like him much more than that Miles. He had a sly look, like my third husband."
"Miles?"
Oliver tilted his head with gentle curiosity. Fuck. I was about to have a horrible experience that could almost certainly have been avoided if I'd been more honest with the guy to begin with. It's like there was a moral here or something.
Judy banged her fist against the arm of her chair, somewhat startling Michael of Kent.
"He was a wrong'un from the start. Charming, of course, but I always knew he was going to..." "Judy..."
That was Mum, coming to my rescue, just like always. "Okay, like about 90% of the time... when she wasn't the problem?"
"We are here to eat my special curry and watch the drag race. We are not here to talk about that man." "Then dish up, old girl. It must be ready by now." "My special curry, she cannot be rushed." "It's been in a slow cooker since you got up this morning.
If it was any less rushed, it'd be catatonic.
My mum threw up her hands.
It is called a slow cooker. It is slow. If it was not slow, it would be called a fast cooker. Or maybe just a cooker.
Oliver dislodged Eugenie and climbed to his feet. Can I help at all? Mum and Judy gazed at him adoringly. God, he gave good parent. Worse, I was pretty sure he meant it. By the way, I said, I should have mentioned this earlier, but Oliver's vegetarian. He gave me a genuinely betrayed look, as if I'd respected his ethical choices just to make him look bad in front of my mother.
Please don't worry, it's not a problem.
Of course it's not a problem.
Mum somehow managed to turn boff into a gesture.
I'll pick the meat out in the kitchen.
Judy shook her head.
Don't be a ninny, Odile. That's very disrespectful. What you should do is fish the vegetables out and serve them separately.
I assure you, Oliver protested, neither is necessary. Mum turned to me.
You see? Why are you making such a big fuss over nothing, Luke? You are embarrassing yourself.
She barreled off again, and Oliver, mouthing a sorry in my direction, trotted after her. I held out a tempting pay-attention-to-me hand to Eugenie, but all I got for my trouble was a disdainful glance before she scampered out in pursuit of Oliver. Well, fine. My perfect fake boyfriend and the cute dog could go and play with my mother in the kitchen while I was stuck in the front room with a serial divorcee in her mid-80s.
Just us, eh?
Judy had that I'm about to start a long anecdote and there's nothing you can do about it look in her eye.
I never did tell you what happened with those bullocks, did I?
I surrendered with as much grace as I could muster, which admittedly wasn't very much. You didn't. How were they?
Terrible disappointment. I went to see the chap, expecting him to have a nice big healthy pair of bullocks for me to get my hands on, but when I got there, I found I'd been quite misled.
Yeah, it happens.
I know. We went all the way down to his paddock, and he got them out for me, and frankly they were substandard. About half the size I'd expected. I mean, I think there was something wrong with them, to tell you the truth. The one on the left had this strange swelling, and the one on the right was listing, most unfortunately.
It sounds, I offered tentatively, like you were better off leaving them alone.
That's what I thought. Obviously I gave them a good once-over anyway, just in case. Nice firm pat-down and all that. But in the end I had to tell the fellow, no, I'm sorry, but I will not be handling your oddly shaped bullocks.
To my tremendous relief, Mum, Oliver and Eugenie came back in with the curry, before Judy could explain how he'd gone on to try to interest her in his prize rooster. Oliver handed a bowl of curry to Judy, and then he, Mum and I squidged onto the sofa like three not especially wise monkeys. Has this got banana in it? I asked, prodding nervously at what I hesitated to call my dinner. Mum shrugged.
They put bananas in curries all the time.
In specific curries. Curries where the rest of the ingredients are chosen to complement banana.
It's like tofu or beef. It absorbs the flavour. It's delicious, Odile,
declared Judy, loyally.
Best one you've ever made.
We fell silent as we grappled with Mum's cooking. I wasn't exactly a wizard in the kitchen myself, but I think Mum was an evil wizard in the kitchen. It took skill and years of practice to be as consistently and specifically terrible at food as she was.
So,
Oliver could have been doing his social lube thing as usual, or maybe he'd just realised that if he was talking, he didn't have to be eating. His eyes were definitely watering.
Is that your guitar?
It was, and it usually lived in the attic. I'd like to think I would have noticed if I hadn't been so distracted by, well, everything else.
Ah, oui. Luke's father wants me to collaborate with him on a new album.
I choked on curry. I mean, I've been choking on curry already, but this time the reaction was emotional, rather than chemical. You didn't tell me that.
Well, you didn't tell me you had a fake boyfriend.
That's different.
Oliver didn't walk out on us 25 years ago and isn't a complete arsehole.
I'm not even sure I'm going to do it, mon canton.
Mum forked up a curried banana with what appeared to be genuine relish.
I haven't written in years. I think I've run out of things to say.
Judy glanced up from her almost empty bowl. No wonder the Queen was still going. They clearly made the aristocracy out of concrete.
Of course you haven't. Just need to get back on the horse, that's all.
I'm not sure the horse is what I remember it being. Horses get old too, you know. Sometimes it's kinder to leave them out in the field, eating the apples.
I can't believe you're even thinking about this.
I stopped slightly short of yelling.
Obviously, if you want to write music, that's great, but why do you have to do it with John fucking Fleming?
We always add something together, and this may be the last chance I get.
I plonked what was left of my curry on the side table. This was a perfect excuse not to eat it, but I was also kind of too angry for food right now.
You mean the last chance he'll get? He's blatantly using you.
So? I could use him back.
It's true, added Judy. You're never more popular than when you're dead. Look at Diana.
Yeah, but...
I accidentally elbowed Oliver in my effort to gesticulate.
You'll have to spend time with him. He doesn't deserve to spend time with you.
Luke, I decide who I spend time with, not you.
I opened my mouth, then closed it again. Sorry, I... just... sorry.
Don't worry, mon cher. You don't have to look after me.
She stood up decisively.
Now, shall we tidy away the dinner things, and then gag on the fierce queens?
Chapter 26. Partly out of a desire not to look like a terrible son, and partly because I needed a change of scenery, I persuaded Mum to let me deal with the clean-up. It wasn't until I got into the kitchen that I remembered quite what carnage my mum was capable of creating, especially when she was making the special curry. "I can see where you get it from," said Oliver, coming in behind me, with Eugenie trailing behind him. I dumped the bowls next to the sink, which was full of other things that should in no way have been necessary to produce anything like what we'd just eaten. "I'm sorry." I kept on staring at the washing up, too scared to look at Oliver, in case he was horrified, or disappointed, or confused, or contemptuous. "This is awful, isn't it?"
"Of course it's not awful. They're your family, and you clearly all care about each other a lot."
"Yeah, but we've talked about my dad's penis, served you a literally inedible non-vegetarian curry, and then I had a fight with my mum I really wish you hadn't seen."
His arms went round me, in that enfoldy sort of way he was so good at, and he pressed against my back.
"It's certainly very different from what I'm used to, but I don't think it's bad. It's honest."
"I shouldn't have freaked out about John Fleming."
"You had a slightly emotional disagreement that I could tell came from a good place."
I let myself lean into him, his chin settling neatly onto my shoulder, as if it belonged there. "You can't want any of this."
"If I didn't want this, I wouldn't have come."
"It must be so weird to you, though."
Turning, I discovered too late that it brought us way too close, way too quickly. Probably I should have moved away, but between the sink and the curry apocalypse, there was nowhere for me to go. And anyway, I wasn't totally sure I wanted to. "I mean, you have two fully functional parents, and neither of them have ever been in jail or on TV. I bet you don't row in public or ask if people are in the KGB 2 seconds after meeting them." He laughed softly, his breath warm and sweet against my lips. Oddly sweet, actually, considering the curry. Must have been the banana.
"No, we don't. And I admit I'm quite glad we don't. But it doesn't mean that it's wrong you do. People express love in different ways."
"And apparently I do it by being a dick."
"Then..."
God, his mouth right now wasn't stern in the slightest.
"You must care for me very deeply."
"I...
I was actually dying. I was going to blush myself to death.
Boys,
bellowed Mum,
we are tired of waiting for you, and we are starting our engines. You do not want to miss the entrances. They are a very important part of the experience.
We startled away from each other, almost guiltily, and hurried back to the living room.
Come, come,
Mum waved us onto the sofa.
This is my first viewing party. I am very proud.
I couldn't quite imagine anything worse than sitting between my mum and my boyfriend. I mean, my fake boyfriend, who I might have accidentally spurted feels onto in the kitchen. On the sofa, while we watched RuPaul's Drag Race with her best friend and four spaniels named after minor royals. So I sat on the floor instead, slightly closer to Oliver's leg than was probably strictly necessary. Also, I didn't quite have the heart to tell Mum that me, Judy, and Oliver didn't really add up to a viewing party. We were more like some people watching television. Apparently Mum and Judy were up to season 6 already, which shouldn't have surprised me because, as far as I could tell, Mum and Judy's standard evening was Netflix and chill, only not a euphemism. At least, I assumed it wasn't a euphemism. Probably best not to think too much about that. They got all of one queen in before the running commentary started, and for the next 2 full episodes, Judy and Mum were ranking the death drops, making inaccurate predictions about who would go out, and asking us earnestly which boys we thought looked nicest. Mum paused before episode 3 autoplayed.
How are you enjoying the drag race, Oliver? You are not too confused?
No, he said. I think I'm keeping up.
We should probably explain that the woman who does the judging at the end and the man in the workroom at the start are actually the same person.
I put my head in my hands.
At the beginning we thought it was like Project Runway, and the man at the beginning is like Tim Gunn, and the woman at the end is like Heidi Klum. But then Judy realized that they seem to have the same name, and that because it is a show all about men putting on dresses, she probably is actually the same man, only in a dress.
I looked up again. Nothing gets past you, does it, Mum?
Yes, agreed Oliver, ever polite. The name did tip me off.
Seriously, Oliver, I asked, nervously, how are you finding the show? We can leave at any time at all. He made a humming noise.
We don't have to go. I'm enjoying myself. And the show is interesting.
You are so right, Oliver.
Mum turned to him enthusiastically. Odds were about 60-40 in favour of her next line being wildly inappropriate.
I had not known there were so many different sorts of gays. In my day, we had Elton John and Boy George, and that was it.
Freddie Mercury? I offered. Judy's mouth dropped open.
He was never. But he had a moustache and everything.
Famously so, I'm afraid.
Well, stone me if you don't learn something new every day.
She turned to Oliver with a terrifyingly interested look in her eye. Oh, God.
What about you, old man? Have you ever sissied that walk?
Do you mean, he asked, have I ever done drag?
Is that an insensitive question? They're doing it on TV now, so I assumed it was fine.
Oliver did his contemplative frown.
I'm not sure I want to set myself up as an authority on what's insensitive. I mean, for what it's worth, most people don't, and I personally never have. It's honestly not something I see the appeal of.
There was a small pause.
Well, it's all larks, isn't it?
Said Judy.
Like those parties we used to have in the '50s, where the boys would get up in dresses and the girls would get up in suits, and then we'd drink far too much fizz, sneak off into the bushes, and do naughty things to each other.
Oh dear. I was perilously close to using the phrase, it exists on a spectrum.